Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, certainly wish that any of our listeners take a look at your instant reaction podcast that you did at 2 o'clock in the morning. Quick look back at Florida State's impressive win over Michigan in the Orange Bowl. We'll certainly spend some time tonight looking back at that win and also just having an idea as far as what it means for the program and how it situates or how the program finds itself situated as it makes a close here in the final weeks of recruiting. Also going to draw upon your experience at both the Under Armour All-American game and your current location, which is at the USA or the U.S. Army All-American game. So excited, as always, to do these. Nice little bowl win momentum in the wins of the program, and excited to have a conversation as to where Florida State is in recruiting, a place that it very much finds itself with some significant momentum of its own on the recruiting trail. But as always, this podcast is brought to you by our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. We'll get into the Orange Bowl conversation, but just want to remind people as to the product that we're both authentically excited about, and it's been such a kind of a game changer for us and what we've been able to do. And like I said, we'll be talking Orange Bowl conversation and a certain individual who wasn't able to be there, but his name only reminds me of the three ingredients that make up Louisiana hot sauce and how fantastically simple it is. It's peppers, it's vinegar, and it's salt. And when those three things are together and aged correctly, it's a hell of a product and something you can add to any dish. As I've said many times, it's probably a 2 to 3 cent cost as far as per application, and there's no cheaper, more effective way to make a meal better, and it's been a fantastic addition to the podcast and certainly has allowed us to do a lot of the things that we've wanted to do for a long time.
And unlike Michigan's peppers, these peppers will not pull up lame. They come ready to play every day, every meal. You can put it on almost anything. It's versatile, and it just stays healthy. It stays fresh. Long shelf life on it, and that's because it's simple and just made with the best ingredients.
And with that, we'll get into the previously mentioned Orange Bowl. So, Bud, let's jump right into it.
Ingram, kudos to you for nailing Under Armour All-America game and U.S. Army All-American game. I stress it to our writers, there actually is a difference, and you got that. That's great attention to detail on your part, sir. Glad to be back doing another show. Apologies to all who listened to the Instant Reaction podcast if I sounded tired. I was. So I probably wasn't my best on that night, but we did end up getting one out. Hopefully people were able to listen to that on New Year's Eve. And, that's a great win for FSU, man. I mean, I know it's a bowl game and whatnot, and I've made my stance on bowl games pretty clear, but it's still a team that I don't think either side was truly lacking in motivation. Which is good because sometimes you really see that, and we've seen some of the kind of wonky bowl results this year that indicate maybe some of these teams do, but I don't think either team was. Both teams seem very fired up to play. And look, we know that Michigan is a really good football team. Now, they're not necessarily like good in a pretty way, and I think that's important to remember, but they're damn good. That offense does not look pretty, but it still put up points almost everybody this year. You know, that Florida State, I think, was – their FSU's defense held Michigan to its second worst game of the entire season. And Michigan's defense is really damn good. I was very impressed by Florida State's offensive line in this game. The way they block, that Michigan front is excellent. Michigan's secondary is really strong. Their linebackers are pretty good. And we know they're extremely well coached. Don Brown has given Jimbo Fisher fits in previous years. Remember when he was at Maryland and Boston College? So kudos to the FSU staff for getting this team ready to play. Also kudos for, hey man, that's good positive publicity there, letting those guys ride some jet skis. You know, that did a whole lot more traffic than I thought it was going to. The fact that Harbaugh was like, you know, winning will be our fun. We take pride and delight in hard preparation. Man, it's a bowl game. Have some fun with it. You know, go.
Yeah. It's a bowl game in South Florida. Like, how, you know, this is it's a big deal. You get to go to Miami. Obviously, Michigan recruits all over the place, but that's not a climate that those kids find themselves in all that often. So, that's tough ass to have everybody locked up, holed away in the hotel room, and did not Maybe the same preparations last year led to a significant and convincing win over a school from the state of Florida, but not as much luck in 2016.
An interesting juxtaposition there. Last year, Michigan beat Florida by what, 40? I mean, it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Oh, they killed. I mean, it was embarrassing. Yeah, absolutely. I don't remember the exact score. It sounds like you're looking it up now, but yeah, it was a complete domination.
Yeah, so like 41-7, so 34 points. This year, FSU beats a better Michigan team. I think we can all agree, even without Jarrell Peppers, who I don't know if you heard or not, but he didn't play.
I think I did see that mentioned once or twice.
That thing is still doing shares on Facebook, by the way. That little 150-word article I wrote just quickly as soon as I realized how pissed people were about ESPN doing that. It is still cooking on Chartbeat and on Trackbeat. So, yeah, good on you, FSU fans, for sharing that. Much appreciated. I thought this was a good game from a number of positions. I like the offensive lines play. I thought, you know, receivers did a pretty good job of playing the ball at times. Look, Keith Gavin is obviously young. They had I don't want to go negative here. They had a lot of balls that just weren't catchable, and that's certainly a concern. But the defense, man, that defense is kind of feel like, how many guys do you think had their best game on defense?
I know two linebackers did.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people. And Christmas had a great game. And just a lot of people had a much better game than what they displayed throughout the course of the season. And you're right, you had such a nice improvement at certain position levels. But also, you just had the question of to bowl preparation. You come out with that first drive, you would hit two plays for 55 yards or something like that, or three plays for 55 yards. You're immediately in scoring position with a nice throw to Kermit and then two Dalvin runs. Nooney does what Nooney does and gives you a first and goal from the 6-inch yard line. The defense comes out immediately locked in. Matthew Thomas makes an incredible play. You end up making him kick a field goal, but just both units sharp from the gun. And that hadn't been anything we've seen in a bowl game from Florida State for a long, long time. So a lot to be positive about and a lot to take away from the game, both just preparation and certain production from various position groups.
And a way to hide the fact that at times you were playing three true freshman defensive backs. That was big. And part of the way you hit it was by not allowing big plays, right? And I talked about this on the Instant podcast, but Florida State, I think, only allowed two plays over 20 yards in this game. So they would give Michigan some of the underneath throws if Michigan could hit them, but they tackled very well. Now, Michigan did not have a whole lot of run after the catch in this ballgame. Several times Spate was kind of scrambling around for his life. Would complete it underneath, you have defensive flow going one way, and your instant reaction is, oh man, I hope this guy didn't cut this ball back against the grain. But no, Florida State was in position to make a tackle. Ultimately, though, the defensive line on the night, that was so huge. Walker played a great game. Thought Sweat did some good things, like you mentioned. Christmas, Naughty. I don't want to go back over it. You already said it. But that's, if you're looking for things from the game to be excited about next year, I think that defensive line is one of the best in the country. And I think it will be one of the best in the country again, because the really only guy you lose off that line is DeMarcus Walker. And you might get something more out of Wally Aimé next year. You know, Josh Kando comes in as an early enrollee, probably the best player at the Army All-America Week.
Under Armour.
Excuse me, at the Under Armour All-America Week. Right. That's encouraging. Look, DeMarcus Walker's going to hurt as a loss, but I don't think that his production is irreplaceable. I like where this defensive line is going next year. I really do. And I think this is going to be a really, really elite defense next year. If it's not one of the 5 or 10 best defenses in the country, I'm going to be pretty shocked.
I certainly agree with a lot of what you said there. I don't want to undersell what DeMarcus Walker has meant to the team and just how consistent of a performer he's been. He honestly has been as dominant of a defensive lineman that I've seen from Florida State since, you have to go back to the peak of Florida State football. He's just a impressive guy, and the production that he gets at the college level is incredible. And granted, some of it sometimes is with creative situational deployment, how they use him. You're right. You touched on this in the incident. They get him matched up with guards a lot, and frequently college guards just aren't that good. But it doesn't take away that he's physically beating the hell out of people, both off the ball and with technique. And he just was able to put his stamp on games and relatively big games as much as any defensive lineman that I can remember. Certainly Jernigan was huge, and I'm not trying to undersell what eight was for this program, but Walker was, man, I wasn't sure we were going to see another sack guy like you used to see with Boulware, Wilson, et cetera, again. And Walker was just an incredible, incredible player.
He really was, and you're right. I hope that didn't come off as me underselling that. He really is an elite college football player, and he'll be hard to replace. I am just encouraged, though, by the number of talented bodies they have on that defensive line, and that is one spot where depth really matters, not only because guys get banged up, but also because you do have to rotate them throughout the game. I mean, for how many teams – what's Fred Jones going to be next year, a junior or senior?
I think Fred's going to be a junior, redshirt junior, but I could be wrong about that.
So you think about that. I mean, Fred Jones is a pretty good nose guard for college football. Now, he's not like a big-time pro prospect or anything, but there's not a lot of teams out there who are going to have a redshirt junior like Fred Jones as a backup nose guard. He would start for a number of teams in the ACC probably. That's very encouraging for next year, I think. And I think your defensive backs – with all due respect to Marquez White, getting Derwin James back, I think, is going to easily offset the loss of Marquez White.
I will go back to the defensive line real quickly before I circle back to White in the secondary. I'm not saying necessarily that you have misguided optimism or that you're creating optimism that's not there. I personally agree with you. It's an incredible roster, and the way that you've seen successive implementation of freshman defensive ends just lets you know that – at least for right now, you've got a group of coaches that is very much able to get the most out of pieces that you have. Brad Lawing is as good of a position coach at Florida State that I can remember immediately, and he's has to give you a level of confidence with the raw product that you give him, then he's going to be able to get it ready and get it ready in a really quick manner to contribute at the level that Florida State plays at. So I personally think that you have a chance to have a similar level of play from the defensive line. Just don't want to understate what the loss of Walker will look like. And the secondary, I'm maybe even more optimistic than you. I'm not trying to bag on a kid, but honestly, Marquez White just didn't have a great year. Certainly didn't have the year that you would have hoped for him, and that maybe you could have projected after last year. So best to him, great guy, good program guy from everything I've heard. Just maybe didn't have quite the year that that you would have thought have coming into it.
100% right there. So what else do you want to talk about from the Orange Bowl? Jim Harbaugh calling timeouts?
Harbaugh calling timeouts. And just if we just had an ode to DeMarcus Walker, we should probably spend 90 seconds talking about one Dalvin Cook as well.
God, he's special, man. Yeah. If you're of the mindset that next year's team won't be a lot better than this year's team, and I'm not sure I'm of that mindset, right? There's a possibility the team next year could take a step. Or I think there's a possibility it could be about the same. Or in some scenarios, I think it could be not as good. Schedule next year, I think, might be easier overall. But you do start with obviously the first game. But
you travel to you make a trip to the upstate of South Carolina as well. I mean, it's
that's true.
It's two very, very daunting, don't undersell that you're playing both teams that are in next week's national championship game, and one of them's a neutral site, one of them's on the road.
If you're one of the people that thinks next year's team won't be a lot better or might actually, regress a little bit, I think the main reason you think that is because next year's team will not have Dalvin Cook, right? Isn't that like the main reason? Not necessarily better record, worse record, but just quality of team. I think that's got to be far and away the biggest concern, is that you have a quarterback who completed 47% of his passes against ranked teams. That is horrendous. Dalvin Cook bailed you out in all those games.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do without him? But most teams, almost all teams, can't run a draw on 3rd and 22 and have it turn into 70 yards.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I was watching the game with a bunch of fans from other programs, and you know, most of them had a healthy appreciation for Dalvin Cook. But when he hit that 70-yard run on 3rd and 22 and just made that angle just literally vanish, everybody looked at me and was like, "Yeah, that's just a different talent than what you see at the college game." Undoubtedly, Dalvin, what a night from him, and absolutely agree with you. If it's if you're looking at next year and you have pause, it's because you don't have number four back there to turn a 9-yard gain into a 72-yard gain. You're looking at maybe next year a 9-yard gain being an actual 9-yard gain. So yeah, we're in agreement there.
So a positive spin on this is this, and look, Dalvin Cook is one of the best players in Florida State history. Now everybody agrees with us with what we said, you know, over a year ago that he is definitely the best running back in FSU history. I don't think anybody else doubts that now at all. If you're going to lose a player of that caliber, probably the easiest position to replace him at, and I don't want to say it's going to be easy to replace Dalvin Cook, so nobody go running to all the message boards and start tweeting at us like this. But if you got to do it, the easiest position to say, hey, we just lost an all-timer at this position, we got a 5-star coming in to replace him, the easiest position, like, for me to buy that could actually happen is running back.
Mm-hmm.
Because the transition from high school to college running back is just not that great. You know, we see guys as freshmen who have tremendous seasons at running back. You know, if Dalvin had played the whole year in 2014, he probably would have had, you know, well over 1,000 yards. I'm pulling this up here, so apologize if people can hear me typing. But looking at yards per game this year, you really didn't have a whole lot of true freshman running backs who tore it up. Ohio State, Mike Weber, had a really nice year. I mean, 1,100 yards on only 182 carries. That's 6 yards a carry, you know, in a very good conference. Trayvon Williams for A&M had a grand. But, man, if you look at like previous years, right, there's been some really excellent seasons. Saquon Barkley, you know, went for like 1,106 per Penn State in 2015. You go back to Dalvin's freshman year, Samaje Perine, 1,700 yards. Mm-hmm. Nick right. Chubb, in your neck of the woods, you know, 1,550. Going down the list here, Nick Wilson for Arizona before he got hurt, like 1,400. Royce Freeman for Oregon, 1,400. You know, Marlon Mack was a freshman that year for USF, 1,100. Leonard Fournette went for over a grand. It's very possible to do this as a true freshman. So FSU fans like somewhat didn't appreciate just how much better Jameis was than replacement level at quarterback. But I think the replacement level at quarterback is lower than the replacement level at running back. Does that make sense? I'm hopefully I'm describing this correctly.
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay.
All right. So I think, you know, we've given a decent idea as to what you know, what you might see just from a very far away and even prior to spring from next year's team, and what the certain losses of two of your better players on both sides of the ball could mean. And I'll make some kind of sarcastic joke here about that you have to feel real good about Jaquez Patrick because you've fully integrated him into the offense and got him ready to be a feature back. So, table is wide open. It may very well be a freshman, like you just alluded to, with all the other examples. But that's another conversation for another day as far as what the future at tailback looks like. Bud, anything else you want to take away or comment on about the Orange Bowl before we start to move to recruiting?
I thought Florida State fans showed up pretty good. For all the talk that there'd be more Michigan fans there. And look, there were certainly a lot of Michigan people down in Florida, but I think that Florida State fans showed up pretty good. You could hear the war chant on TV, so that was solid.
Looked really impressive on television. I've got to say, I count me in the group that you just referred to. I mean, and I did not get to make it down to the Orange Bowl originally. I thought I was, but and granted, Florida State when I went to the Orange Bowl in 2006 or 2006, it was a different time for the program and a much less enthused fan base, but the Penn State showing at that game was probably like 4-1 for Penn State fans or Florida State fans. Not that I necessarily expected that in this game, but that was a great showing by the Florida State fan base. And you're right, you could hear the war chant. You could see a really good showing as far as just the colors in the stands. And you had a coach that was as petulant as he could be and decided to call timeouts at the end of the game and let you hear that war chant just a little bit longer. So good on you, Mr. Khaki.
That was great, Jim Harbaugh. Also, who the hell tucks a sweater into their khakis? That looks ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he's fully committed to, like, baseball hats, glasses. He just, at this point, I think he's almost trying to make a caricature of himself to an extent.
Oh, we can talk about this real quick. Oh, by the way, folks, a couple things here. Number one, in a minute, we're going to give you a sponsorship read. Number two, yes, we said we're going to do a mailbag show, and we are going to do that. However, that will not be tonight. But I am going to mix in a question, and the question was, who would you rather have for the next decade, Jimbo Fisher or Jim Harbaugh? And I answered this on Twitter, but Twitter's only 140 characters, so I'm going to expound upon this, and I can also get your answer here. But my answer was, it depends on where you are. If I'm at Michigan, I think I would rather have Jim Harbaugh due to his unique connections there. Also the fact that he's a cornball Yankee, right? And that plays a lot better in Ann Arbor, Michigan than it does in Tallahassee, Florida. I think people would really kind of tire of his act in Tallahassee. Now, on the other hand, I don't think Jimbo Fisher, who is from West Virginia and is very country and wears cowboy boots 24/7, I don't think that would play all that well in Ann Arbor, you know? So I think it really does matter about fit. And Florida State's got a great coach in Jimbo Fisher, and he fits the program extremely well. And to be honest here, despite the fact that Michigan lost, I think Michigan has a great coach in Jim Harbaugh, and he fits their program very well.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you put the culture into it and how they fit in their respective culture. I mean, I know Harbaugh played ball at Michigan. Isn't he from is he from Ann Arbor or from a home state product there? Anyway, he's very much of the native culture, you're right, and has that kind of, I wouldn't even say cornball Yankees, more like a cornball Midwesterner. He's just a little bit of an odd cat. Very eccentric, and you're right, the two personalities fit each other much better at their respective universities. I'd also say that if you just asked me in general, I'd choose probably Fisher, because I'm not sure Harbaugh can exist in one place for a decade. I think he just kind of burns bright and moves on. So I would be a little leery as to if you're going to guarantee me a decade of time as to what the end of that might look like with Harbaugh.
I think that's true. He does wear on people.
But you alluded to it. Let's go ahead and thank our friends from Madison Social and what they make possible for us, and the fact that they are a multi-year sponsor and have really been a instrumental part of us transforming this thing into something that wasn't recorded via TalkShoe and quite laughable audible product at times. Into a mildly respectable podcast, and hopefully we have maintained the content level throughout the years. But Madison Social has been incredibly beneficial to us, and we would encourage you to always think about them, particularly during basketball season. And Bud, we love them just because they have a quality product. Great things always coming out of the kitchen, and I know one thing of late particularly caught your interest there.
Yeah, Inger, I was scrolling through their feed. I'm going to actually say two things because my ad read was pretty short on the instant. Madison Central tweeted, "More to come, but starting this Wednesday and every Wednesday after, Central Township, which is the For the Table's other restaurant concept along with Central and Madison Social, will host the Booziness Lunch." Inger, I did not misspeak there. I did not mean to say business lunch. They are hosting a Booziness Lunch. Free booze with lunch. Details to come. So that sounds pretty cool. Looks like they were serving up a Noel Cast Bloody Mary recently. Caught a nice picture of that. You guys can always go get that out. Pretty cool that we have a drink named after us there in the restaurant. But here's what really caught my eye. Buttermilk biscuit pancakes with sausage gravy on them. Dude.
Damn.
We got to hit this. I mean, like that looks really good. maybe an extra hour, maybe an extra 3 or 4 hours in the gym.
It's probably a multi-day project to work that off. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure you're going to get that with 90 minutes on the elliptical.
Probably not. You know, but
some meals aren't made to have that with the back of your in the back of your mind, certainly.
Dude, that looks just ridiculous. So yeah, Madison Social, go check that out, guys. That sounds really fun. So cool, man. What are we going to talk about now?
Let's talk about your time at the Under Armour game. But first name that we probably want to touch on, I'll certainly leave it open to your option, but nobody drew more positive reviews than a certain defensive end, a recent commitment to Florida State. I'll go ahead and let you open the conversation there.
Yeah. Josh Kando, really nice performance. Good performance in the game. I think he had 5 or 6 pressures from what I saw. I think he had a sack and a couple tackles for loss. He is so much better now than he was back when I saw him at the opening or like at the regional camp for the opening, which is back in April. And you can really tell, just you ever seen like a National Geographic video with like a baby giraffe?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Just like, wow, that's a lot of legs and a lot of arms and not really sure what to do with all those legs and arms. So man, Kando like physically looked like so impressive back when I saw him in the spring. You know, he's jacked and he's like 6'6". But I really didn't think he was a great player back then. And he was, I think at one point, the number one rated player in the country. So he was certainly a very good high school football player. But man, I didn't see him necessarily have quite the play that he has now. Just kept getting better and better, and you could tell that he's taken the coaching well at IMG. And now I'm very excited for what he can do at FSU as a true freshman, because I really think he's going to get on the field and play, and maybe play a lot, right? You want to talk about somebody to push Janarius Robinson there, the 4-star defensive end they got last year, who had shoulder surgery upon getting on campus. And for all accounts, he's been working well, so that's certainly encouraging. He was a raw guy coming in. He's going to have immediate competition for his spot. Like, the day Kando steps on campus, they're going to be fighting for 400 or 500 snaps next year. And that's really encouraging because, good work with his hands. He's a length power player that also has good speed. I think he's like 240-ish right now. He'll probably put on 30 pounds of muscle in his career. I think he has the frame to be 270, and that's encouraging because as much 4-2-5 as FSU plays, you really do need your ends to be able to play the run effectively against the spread, be able to stack blockers and shed them as opposed to just jumping around them and shooting gaps, which is also important, but it can't be the only thing you do. So, yeah, Josh Kando, man. I think he got his 5th star on 247. I tweeted out that that's not too early to do that. If he's consistently beating the crap out of quote-unquote 5-star offensive tackles, then guess what? You're probably not a 4-star. You're more like a 5-star. So good job there. A couple other kids there, too, that I was very impressed with. First, I want to get your thoughts on Kando, if you had any.
No, I mean, it's more or less what you said. A kid that it's just a success story from IMG, really. It's a kid who went there and turned out a much better, more polished product, which if that's what, if that's what the situation and that's where the benefit for those kids is, then good for them. And it's I personally, I don't want to say admire is the right word, but hats off to 247 having a little more flexibility, a little more liquidity with how they reevaluate their rankings and to be able to go in and look at a kid after a couple of practices going against the type of prospect and the type of competition level that you referenced. Then yeah, that's a 5-star kid and good for them to go ahead and reevaluate that. So Kandahl, super impressive. I talked about his recruiting in a past podcast. Hats off to Florida State, how they manage that. And you're right, instant competition the second he steps on the field. And again, another really talented raw product that you're giving one of the better position coaches in college football to work with. And it'll be a guy that you probably see anywhere from 300 to 500 snaps out of next year, barring any type of injury.
All right, next, Kalon LeBourne. That was a hell of a performance today in the Under Armour All-America game. I think he had 75 yards total. There's a good video of him on Tomahawk Nation's Facebook page. And, I mean, balance, vision, acceleration, decent top-end speed. I think he's legitimate 200 pounds. I don't think he's, you know, I'm not sure how much bigger he can actually get. But I was, in watching him today, I was actually flipping back and forth. And the other game on TV was Redskins Cowboys. And so I got to see a former FSU player run named Chris Thompson. And I thought, man, Kalon Mayborn looks a hell of a lot like Chris Thompson. Just that smooth gliding style. Yeah. He goes into traffic and all of a sudden he shoots out the other end and you're kind of like, wow, how did that happen? Now, I do think he tries to bounce stuff to the outside a little too often. Another guy named Dalvin Cook had that problem, maybe not a problem, but just had a tendency like that because he was always the fastest player on the field in high school. He could get away with it. He very quickly got that out of his system at Florida State. I think that's something Laybourne will have to work on. As I reported earlier, Laybourne told me he does not yet have a qualifying test score, making him the only back in his class not to have one because Cam Akers is an early enrollee. And we also reported last week that Shaquandre White did get his test score. So if Laybourne gets his test score, that's obviously very good news for FSU, and then we're going to have to see if he'll stick. He's saying all the right things so far. Now, I will tell you, some people in the recruiting industry aren't buying it. They're thinking that if he gets that test score, he's going to start looking at some other schools pretty hard. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I can only really go by what the kid tells me. And the kid told me that, hey, he's 100% solid at FSU. He actually recruited Cam Akers to FSU. And he also told me that he doesn't have his test score back from a test he took before Halloween, but he's already scheduled another test. So that's a little tricky to me. Not sure how that works, but maybe that's true. Situation we're going to have to monitor, but he's certainly an elite player. And Florida State unquestionably has the best running back group in the country right now coming in, which if you have to replace Dalvin Cook, that's a very good thing.
Very good thing, yeah. And that situation will sort itself out as far as the roster. Laybourne certainly looks like a kid that is committed to Florida State and has all intentions of staying with that. We'll continue to watch that. A kid that anytime you involve a Lamborghini as a prop in your commitment, you will always have my full support in anything that you do, and wish him best of luck and a hell of a performance today in the All-America game. And Bud, don't want to get a sidetrack, but let's go back to a name you mentioned there at the beginning. Hey, good for Chris Thompson for still being in the league at this point, man. I would have never guessed that at all. So hats off to him, still collecting an NFL paycheck, and good, just getting every ounce of talent out of that body, and good for him being able to still collect a paycheck, and has to be damn near close to his pension at this point.
Man, the word that comes to mind is professional, right? Mm-hmm. You hear Herm Edwards talk about this. I think a lot of times these talking heads on ESPN, but he made a really good point one time when I was watching TV. And I also talked to somebody else who told me this, and it's very true. It's professional football. You have got to act like a professional. You have to show up on time. You got to you have to score well when they evaluate how much of the week's game plan did you digest? How much do you actually know? So there's a large amount of luck. You have to stay injury free. You have to work really hard. You see some of these guys acting like idiots and cutting up, right? But for the most part, the ones that are able to do that and stay on a roster are like the 1% of the 1% of talent, right? And so teams are just going to put up with it. But for the other like 95% of the roster, you can't do that. And a lot of guys think they're in that like 5% of the roster when they're really in that 95% of the roster. And that's why a guy like Chris Thompson, who is a good talent, but he's not like an amazing talent by NFL standards. That's one of the reasons he can stay on a roster. A lot of your guys who are like part-time players and maybe aren't full-time starters, that's a tie-breaking thing, man. That helps them stay on a roster, even over guys who are a little bit more talented than they are.
Absolutely, yeah. Never a guy that you're going to lack from effort. Never a guy that's going to be anything other than a massive asset in the locker room. And just good for a kid out of Madison County still collecting an NFL paycheck.
Next guy to talk about here, Stanford Samuels III, did not play in the game due to I think his shoulder was banged up. Probably smart on his part not to play. You don't want to risk further injuring that. You're early enrolling, so you want to You want to make sure you are healthy when you come in for spring practice. That's pretty good. And Cyrus Fagan, I thought, had a couple good plays in the game. He did get kind of run over at the goal line, but he also had a nice pop on the quarterback on the previous play. And I didn't really see anybody complete any passes against him, so that was good. It's kind of hard to evaluate safety play in an all-star game, so I don't want to say he did amazing or poorly because I really don't know. I just saw a couple plays that he was involved in. I think that's it as far as FSU actual commitments in the game, just those four, right? Yeah. A couple targets as well. Levi Jones, very intriguing to me, four-star linebacker out of Texas. And all week, I've kind of been searching for why does Texas not want him, right? And why does LSU maybe not want him? Because I don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
he's a kid from Austin.
A&M likes him. He's from Austin. Yeah, A&M likes him, and Florida likes him, and FSU likes him. So my question in my mind is, going into the week, is it talent or is it something else? And after watching him, I really don't think it's talent. I think he's certainly an FSU quality player. He's got length. He's got pretty good athleticism. Now, I know he got kicked out of the Texas State playoff game like three plays into the game for having two personal fouls. But
well, we could just have him room with Mr. Trey Marshall, yeah, and they'll be good to go, man.
Hey, with our powers combined, we'll play a full game. Oh man,
Trey, I'm not even mad at Marshall. I mean, I don't know how you play football other than the way that he plays. Damn, if that guy is just not a. I mean, his first personal foul was stupid, but he just, 50-50 chance on Marshall being able to finish a game.
I do have to say that last night I had dinner with a Big 12 official, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him, and I was asking some questions, and he said eventually he does think that they're either going to go to a one-yard illegal man downfield rule because it's almost impossible to call the three-yard correct. It's just the differentiation between like three and four and five is so hard. It's much easier to differentiate between line of scrimmage and one or two because the variance is lesser. However, he said the other thing he thinks that they are probably going to do eventually is put some element of intent in targeting, right?
Mm-hmm. You have to. You have to.
Yeah. And the way he thinks they're going to do that is this. He thinks that they're going to look at your initial launch angle, okay? So, and where the guy was and how he was moving when you launched. So that if you launch and the guy reacts by ducking into the hit, and I'm not saying that's exactly what happened with Trey Marshall. Trey Marshall was too high on that play, right? Like, he would have probably gone helmet to helmet if the guy doesn't duck a little bit. But he does think that eventually that's going to happen, that they're going to say, okay, this player made a bona fide attempt to strike the ball carrier in like the rib cage area, and then the guy ducked down into it. We can't fault him for that. No penalty. He doesn't know when it's going to happen, but he thinks that eventually that's what they're going to go to, which I think is good. I think that's what they should go to because intent does seem to matter.
Intent has to matter. I mean, particularly if you've got a guy playing heads up. And that's what I mean, looking at the ball carrier when he tackles. Look, if you run in there and you drop ahead and you're leading with your crown, then there's nothing that I or anybody else can do for you. But, I mean, when you're talking about a punt return situation where you've got a guy who's run 42 yards, top speed, and asking him to be able to control, his point of contact within a 6 or 8 inch window, it's not possible, one, and it's not really how football, I understand the need to evolve, and I need the certainly understand the want to try to protect people, and we don't need free safeties running themselves and turning themselves into missiles, and eventually we were going to have a really nasty injury with the way football was played, and still probably will at some point, but intent has to be introduced into this at some point or fashion, or otherwise there's just such a random element of luck and bad luck at that for a lot of these plays and a lot of these kids that end up getting themselves thrown out of games.
Yeah, it's kind of silliness. I do believe that Marshall will miss the first half of the Bama game for that, as far as I understand. I think the penalty it does carry over. By the way,
that is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. But what? Okay, whatever.
Can I interrupt this podcast real quick? Are you watching Sunday Night Football right now? Lions and Packers. All right. It looks like Michelle Tafoya, the NBC anchor.
Yes, sideline.
She's doing her sideline report. The ball boy comes running from the other sideline to get in the frame, and he totally stunts on her. He's dancing his ass off on national TV. Man, that is fantastic. sorry, I had to explain to the listeners what I was laughing about in the background there. That'll probably get on Twitter very soon. I'd have to imagine you guys can find that if you want. Other targets at the FSU game. Let's take a look at who else was there. You had Marvin Wilson. I thought he had some pretty good play in the game. Somebody noted that conditioning will probably be a focus for him. I agree. He does have a bit of a gut. But look, man, a lot of defensive tackles in high school do. I'm not really worried about that. I didn't really see any plays from Leak Gray that I can comment on, but he certainly has good size for a safety. And then Robert Beal had a couple tackles for loss as well. I also want to talk briefly about ridiculous comparisons on the broadcast of the Under Armour game, in case y'all were watching that or you plan to go back and rewatch that. They made the comparison of Josh Kando to Lorenzo Featherston, and that is just not a good comparison in my opinion because mainly they're just not alike as players. And if you're going to make comparisons, you should compare players that are somewhat similar. Lorenzo Featherston was like an all-speed stick figure type, and I don't think that he ever got like to 240 pounds. Josh Kando was as big as a high school junior as Lorenzo Featherston was as a college junior. So not a great comparison there, in my opinion. Maybe like if you want to compare similar size, Jason Pierre-Paul is who I think Kando will eventually look like. I don't know if he's that talented, but size-wise and build and the way their bodies look, I think that's more similar. And then they compared Robert Beal, who is 6'3", to Josh Sweat, who's like 6'5 and a half and real long and a long lever guy. Robert Beal, more of a compact defensive end, more like a DeMarcus Walker build. I don't get that. I'm like, no, man, I think it's more like a Dante Fowler, you could probably compare Robert Beal to. But who knows? I'm not sure these guys are making these up on the spot or whatever, or if they're just really trying to compare only to former FSU players. But I just didn't find those comparisons to really fit. And I know a lot of people had tweeted at us and said, do you think that's accurate? But
the Lorenzo Featherston, I mean, that is just a strange, that's just a random person to compare somebody to. One, because he was of such unique body dimensions. But also, if you're not an absolute diehard Florida State fan, are you even going to have an idea as to who they're actually comparing necessarily? I mean, I guess if you're a recruit, Nick, and you're the type of person to watch that game, maybe you have a little bit better idea of the defensive ends over the past 3 or 4 years that I'm giving you credit for. But that's just a bizarre name to draw a comparison to. I will at least give whoever was making these comparisons credit that they did not go the route that some recruiting services have in the past, and that is where you just compare every kid to a 8 or 9 year old or 8 or 9 year NFL vet, like a absolute superstar, where you know every running back is has similar traits to Adrian Peterson and NFL wide receiver XYZ. And
he's just a combination of like Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a more athletic Ward Dunn. I loved whenever people would say that. Like, oh, that's a great comparison, man. So yeah, okay. It's just a personal little rant there.
I always make sure to do it, like on Twitter, if I'm going to tweet about it, even though it's going to cost me a couple characters, you only get 140, like from the ESPN recruiting count. I always put stylistically and in parentheses, like not talent. He's still in high school. And so that people don't, well, actually, maybe be like, no, because I think Jerry Jeudy kind of reminds me a little bit of like Marvin Harrison, right? Just watching their style, the Bama commit out of South Florida there. But as soon as I tweeted that, I was like, did I remember to put, I was like, yeah, okay, I did. I did remember to put the little disclaimer on there. Because otherwise, people, man, they think you're serious.
Mm-hmm.
And right. The fans of the team are like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he might even be a little bit better than NFL Hall of Famer Marvin Harrison. And the fans who don't like that team are going to lose their minds too. So you really do got to be careful with that. Now on to the Army game.
Yeah, man. What's going on out there in Texas so far?
Well, today was check-in. 247 has exclusive rights for check-in, even though NBC has broadcast rights, and we are at SB Nation partially owned by NBC. So we got some cool stuff working with them. Check-in, not really one. I've been DMing some kids all day, walked around San Antonio a little bit, DMing some coaches who want to know kind of what's going on here in San Antonio. Couple interesting things. Cam Akers did show up in FSU gear. Not surprising, but that's your five-star number one rated player in your class. FSU gear on. That's, I mean, obviously he's committed. So he tweeted, like, can't wait to be in Tallahassee. Today's my last day in Mississippi, blah, blah, blah. Now, I will relay a story here from Barton Simmons, who is the head recruiting writer at 247, about Dede Bowie, who is a four-star receiver committed to Ole Miss, one of their two four-star players in their class, not a very good class for Ole Miss this year. If you're an Ole Miss fan, these are some very concerning quotes. And if you're an FSU fan, just listen to some of this stuff. And you can read this on 247sports.com. I want to give them credit. He said he's still solidly committed to Ole Miss. However, he's
it's always a good start to a conversation.
Undecided right now.
Mm-hmm. Solidly committed, possibly undecided. Let the recruiting go on.
Yeah. All right, so pulling up the article now. Okay. He's concerned about NCAA sanctions coming into Ole Miss. That is probably a legitimate concern. Quote, I want to be safe from them getting suspended from bowl games, and I don't know how many years probation is going to be. I want to go to the NFL and do what's best for my family, so I need to find a school and go with it. Now, the problem here is that he is going to sign on signing day, right? And Ole Miss is like 100% not going to get an answer from the NCAA by signing day. It'll probably stretch into 2018. So, 247 asked him, what will he do if the Rebels don't know their NCAA fate for signing day? And he said, quote, find somewhere else. So, that is... If A plus B equals C, Ingram, we have a C situation here because Ole Miss will not know their fate before signing day, and he will be signing on signing day. So by proxy or by definition, he will not know when he signs. So he talks about Mississippi State, talks about Miami, talks about Auburn as well. He's from Mississippi, obviously. And then Cam Akers apparently walked by, and Akers said that he was recruiting Bowie to FSU and blah, blah, blah. And then they asked him point blank, would you commit to Florida State if they offered you? And he said, yes, sir. If you're an Ole Miss fan and Cam Akers just left the state for FSU, you probably hate FSU with like the passion of 1,000 suns right now. Don't you? Like, dude.
I'd say that combined with the first game of the year, it probably has a particular sour relations between the two fan bases right now.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Now, he is the number generally regarded as one of the top 20 receivers in the country, 6'1", 170 pounds. FSU, I don't think it offered him to this point. However, we can report that tonight on Twitter, Tim Brewster did follow him. Tim Brewster is FSU's tight ends coach, but he also recruits the state of Mississippi for the Noles. I don't know if FSU is going to offer. I've not checked yet. It's 10:30 right now, and I'm not going to be texting anybody who would be in position to know officially for FSU at 10:30 at night, because that's a good way to annoy your sources. However, that is certainly interesting to watch. When somebody says something like that, you can bet word is going to get back to the coaching staff. FSU would like to take another receiver in this class, and they might want to take two more. They already have DJ Matthews, who is a elite-level slot, in my opinion, and will probably be able to play early as a slot. Maybe not a ton the first year, but I think he'll be playing a lot, at least by his second year. You know, you're on Henry Ruggs, who is a Bama FSU battle for the most part, with maybe Florida on the outside. You're on Tamorian Terry, who is more of an FSU Auburn battle. Ruggs from Alabama, Terry from Georgia. But now you got Dede Bowie here. That's not a bad option either. If Florida State is able to land two of those three to go along with DJ Matthews, I think you have to feel extremely good about where the receiver recruiting is right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Did Is Terry's academic situation still in question, or was that completely resolved? Do you know, bud?
I do not know. I should ask, but I don't know, unfortunately.
I know that was his initial reason for partially kind of flying under the radar there, but just curious on the fly.
All right, we have Cam Akers in this game. Obviously excited to see him. You have DJ Matthews in this game. Very excited to see him. Jalen Parks, the FSU commit, defensive tackle out of the Gainesville area, Newberry High School. Excited to see him. Jerez Parks, who he was on the list initially to announce in this game, but is now not on the list, at least the one that I know about. So maybe that means he's pushing his commitment date back. Could be interesting to see. And then Henry Ruggs as well, FSU's on. So those are five FSU guys that I'll be keeping an eye on this week. You can be sure that FSU's commits are going to be recruiting him pretty hard to Florida State. And, man, look, FSU's class just inching up there in the rankings. It's getting better and better. I feel like you know, they're on a number of elite-level prospects, and I think they have a good shot to sign several of them right now. They're fifth in the nation. Michigan is ahead of them. Georgia is ahead of them. Ohio State and Alabama are way ahead of them. They have a shot to pass Michigan down the stretch. Now, I don't know if they will because Michigan still is on a couple kids, but it's important to note here, Florida State has 17 commits. Michigan is 26. So if you use like the ratings formula here, Florida State has more upward mobility than does Michigan just because they have more room left in their class. I think we project them to take somewhere between 21 and 24 in this class, depending on how much dead weight they want to cut off this roster. And certainly there's some dead weight on this roster. And I spoke on Twitter about that the other day. People were asking me, how can Alabama continue to recruit like this? And I said, because they are willing numbers. To cut loose dead weight. Right. It's just like lottery tickets. If I give you 10 lottery tickets and I have 150 lottery tickets, and we pay the same amount for them, guess what? I'm going to come out richer than you. Like, that's more chances at hitting it big. Alabama very efficiently gets rid of kids that don't work out in their program. They also scout really well. They evaluate well, and they don't have a lot of guys like academically ineligible or getting in trouble. And I think part of that's because that, you know, if you're there, you kind of walk on eggshells a little bit, right? You slip up even a little, you're probably, you know, you have less margin for error because the guy behind you is probably also a five-star. But Florida State could do more of that. There's a lot of dead weight on this roster. And I don't want to. I probably shouldn't even broach the topic because I don't want to get into this tonight necessarily. It's more of a longer discussion, perhaps for the offseason. But yeah, man, this recruiting class keeps inching up and up and up. They've got 9 blue chips, 8 non right now, which is, you know, a fine ratio. 3 five stars. I really like the top level impact this class will have. Last year we spoke about how the class was real deep, but maybe didn't have the super elite talents right at the very top. And this year is kind of the opposite. I think this year is more of a top heavy class.
It's a whole lot of momentum going into the final couple of weeks, final 4 or 5 weeks of recruiting, and more importantly, you know, the bowl game may not necessarily project as to how you do next year, but it certainly does give you a little bit of a good vibe in recruiting. It's probably not the best word to use, but it sets up your 2018 situation exceptionally well. So, you know, good for Florida State, in a great place. There's certainly been times where we've had conversation as to what they could potentially do to improve their recruiting, and I still think those, you know, when we talk about that, it's valid and legitimate, but at the same time, we have to acknowledge just the level that they continue to recruit to and how good of a recruiter, a personal recruiter, Jimbo Fisher is, which is something that we talked about on our most recent podcast. So want to acknowledge that as always and watch this class as it closes. I completely agree with you. Certainly not going to catch Ohio State or Alabama. Probably don't have a chance to catch Georgia either, but a very legitimate chance to sign one of the top 5 classes in the country. I don't want to say almost certain, but you have you put yourself where you'd almost have to lose some kids to not finish at that place.
I'll put a guarantee on it. I will put a guarantee that Florida State signs at least a top 6 class. All right. And by that, I mean, right now they're 5th. They're like basically tied with LSU and Oklahoma. So right now they're somewhere between 5th and 7th. If you look at it, I think like 2 points separate them. Meanwhile, they're separated by like 40-something points from Alabama. So the margin between 5 and 7 right now is razor thin. I really think they're going to sign at least a top of his class because LSU could pass them. FSU could pass Michigan. I don't think Oklahoma will pass FSU. I don't think Oklahoma has enough priority targets left on its board unless it pulls some serious shocking upsets to get them. So a top 6 class this year is a really good – is really pretty good. I mean, Alabama's class is nuts. Ohio State's class is nuts. Georgia's really killing it this year. Mm-hmm. But, man, Florida State has a very nice class average. I think they're, what, fourth nationally in class average. That's very impressive as well. You're seeing some teams like a Florida. We can probably talk some trash about Florida right now, Igor.
We seem to have found a way to do it almost every other podcast for the last couple of months, and it's not – it's not necessarily us just wanting to do that either. It's an interesting time to be a Gator, and it seems like from day one we've talked about that they've never really quite gotten a whole lot of traction with the new staff. And this point in this class, it has I don't want to say bottomed out, but it's just not coming together at all for the pieces and you know, ultimately it's great to have scheme, it's great to have great coaches, but the Jimmys and Joes dictate to a major extent how well you're going to do, and for whatever reason, it's just not coming together in Gainesville right now.
Correct, Ingram. Also, you said the word interesting. One of my New Year's resolutions is to say interesting less often on the podcast and substitute different adjectives for that. So,
well, if you're going to do that, I certainly have my own weaknesses with repetitive words as well. It's probably a good resolution for both of us. I could kill conversation many times over with a weakness that I have on that word and certain others, but that'd be good for both of us.
So I'm going to substitute the word bad for interesting. It is a bad time to be a Florida Gator because they're getting their ass beat on the recruiting trail. Now, they may close with some kids and move up a little bit, but right now they're not doing a good job of recruiting football players. 19th in the country – just not bringing in a whole lot of talent. Ingram, do you know how many guys FSU has rated in its class that are rated higher than Florida's best player in its class? So, like, if you were down a national list of the top, like, 200 kids, how many FSU kids would you find before you got to the first Gators kid?
Okay.
No cheating.
No cheating. I would not be cheating here. I am going to, for purposes of full disclosure, tell you that I know this number, and it is it's significant, particularly when you think of the best prospect in their class compared to where you would find the first person or the first product or the first prospect on Florida State's list that would rank below it. So the number, I believe, is 7. Is that correct, Bud?
It is 7, right, yeah. FSU has 7 kids in its class who would be the best player in Florida's class.
That's insane. I mean, yeah. That is hard to really make sense of, and it's hard to vocalize how embarrassing that is. I mean, that's your cream of the crop, the best product you have in your class. And you have to count 7 kids destined to go to Tallahassee first. That is that's not the way it's supposed to be when you're you know, recruiting to the flagship university in the state of Florida.
They don't have a kid rated inside the top 125.
How? I honestly, I don't know how that's possible. With a third-year staff, I mean, that's not a – it's not as though you're looking at some guy who's in year 13 and has alienated everybody and doesn't have maybe the quote-unquote booster support needed. I mean, I don't know how that's possible to be at Florida and to have not secured one kid in the top 100.
I don't think they're all that well organized over there. You hear some stories from, like, high school coaches who posted some of these Gator message boards about, like, how, like, they took a prospect over there, like a young kid, right, who you don't know if he's good or bad yet, right? Like, he could be pretty good. And they just, like, they can't find the right person to talk to get in or whatever. Like it just – it's – I think it's an organizational issue. Also, perhaps a lack of dynamic personalities on that staff.
And the lack of personalities, I'm not going to say I can understand, but I can at least sign off on that. the organizational, man, that's not, when you hire a Saban guy, that's what you hire a Saban guy for. You hire somebody that has absolute organization. If he's not Saban, that's fine. But at least he's going to come in and put in the structure that stuff like what you just referenced doesn't happen at all. Particularly when you're not, I don't want to say unlimited resources, but outside of Texas and maybe two or three other schools in the country, there's nobody that should be beating Florida for dollar spent on kids. And I mean legally. I mean all the resources. I'm not saying purchasing of players. I'm talking about recruiting staff, logistic coordinators, everything that goes into that.
Right. I don't get it. You know how many more how many players in FSU's class would be the best player in Miami's class?
This number I absolutely don't know. I know they've got Miami's got a couple of kids that are relatively high rating. I'm going to go four.
Five. Okay. Which is still a nice number to. Man, it's just not often that you find FSU having five or seven kids who would be the number one rated player in another team's class. And this mm-hmm. number, look, this number could certainly change, right? By the time that things happen in signing day. But Miami's recruiting well, but they're not killing it. They're not really doing that much better, at least in terms of talent sign, than they were under Al Golden. Now, they are doing better, and I think they're better coached, so they are going to improve some. But, man, that's – FSU's beating them pretty good right now. By the way, you spoke about Georgia. We can talk about this real quick. Let's play another little guessing game here. How many 4 and 5 stars do you think Georgia has?
I have to admit that I listened to a couple different podcasts on other teams throughout the season just to stay up to date, have an idea as to have some kind of idea as to what content sounds good. And one of those is a friend of mine does a pretty high level Georgia podcast that I enjoy. His name's Brandon Adams. He does a daily Georgia podcast that I think is about as good of any daily podcast that's out there. So hats off to them. And if you ever want to listen to a daily college football podcast, I'd point you in that direction. I believe that Georgia has 18 four-star prospects. Is that right, bud?
19, Ingram. 19. They flipped a kid from who was committed to Auburn till recently, tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain how I'm off by one. Interesting.
They have 19 prospects. Do you know how many the rest of the SEC East has combined?
Well, bud, I am a follower of the SB Nation recruiting Twitter profile, and I do believe that I saw something about this yesterday that the rest of the conference has 20. Is that right? The rest of the SEC East. Let me clarify that, not the entirety of the conference, but the SEC East. I don't use profanity, or I try not to use profanity. That is really hard for me not to put an F word in front of pathetic when it comes to what the SEC East is doing right now.
That is, I mean, dude.
FU Tennessee, FU Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, what in the hell are you, the SEC East is crazy. And it's crazy that the conference continues to get to ride Alabama's coattails in general. That's a conversation for another time. But that is hard to imagine that those schools are doing as poorly as they are. Now, part of that's because of what Clemson and what Florida State have become, and the SEC East very much overlaps those two schools' spheres of influence on the recruiting trail, and it's tough to recruit against Clemson or Florida State right now for anybody. But still, that's not acceptable, and that's going to get some people fired with a quickness.
Now, I do think Georgia's going to run out of spots, and Florida and Tennessee and a couple of their schools will sign a 4 or 5 star down the stretch. So the number will grow, right? Georgia will not sign as many 4 and 5 stars as the rest of the conference or as the rest of the division. That will not happen. But even if they're signing like 60% as much, that's still a major concern. If you're the rest of the SCE, that you can't have that.
That reminds me of and now it's certainly shrunk to an extent, and it's also still true to an extent, but that reminds me of like 6 or 7 years ago when we first started doing this podcast, bud. We could look at the members of the ESPNU 150 that signed in the ACC, and like 75% of them signed with Florida State or Clemson,
right,
and the rest signed with North Carolina, Miami, wherever. But that's the type of talent disparity that you're starting to look at the SEC East.
All right. So right now, Florida State and Clemson have 19 combined, okay, which also should make you go, wow, about Georgia's class, okay?
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Because Georgia has as many 4 and 5 stars right now as FSU and Clemson combined. But the rest of the other ACC teams, so the rest of the ACC combined has what FSU and Clemson have. And this is the ACC, which is not a very good recruiting league outside of those two. The SEC should not do that. That's bad by the SEC East, man. And that is, if you're Florida, you're in such a weird spot because you're like, man, the trajectory of this program is not necessarily upward. And you kind of see some things happening around you, but you're the two-time defending SEC East champions. And you know, it just
and that's what you brought him there to do, damn it.
It just means more.
Yeah, it just means more. Yeah, you can take that and do with it what you want. But yeah, that's pretty pathetic. Well, Florida is something we'll continue to look at and continue to watch and continue to have a little bit of a laugh about. But anything else you wanted to bring to light as far as your time out in Texas or anything else you wanted to touch on as far as recruiting goes?
Yeah, I do want to talk one more kid, Hamson Nasruldeen, who is a safety slash linebacker out of South Carolina. He actually went to J. Graham's school, by the way. I don't know if you guys know that. Not South Carolina, excuse me, North Carolina. He's committed to South Carolina. It's another guy FSU I think would like to flip. FSU fans should be very happy if they manage to get one of Gray and Nasruldeen. So something to keep an eye on there. Other than that, there's some national guys I'm really interested to see. I really want the running backs in this game, Ingram, are ridiculous. Have you taken a look at this running back roster?
A little bit, but tell me and the listeners about it.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm sure the listeners have not. The top 5 rated running backs in the country are all in the Army game. Number 1 rated running back, Najee Harris. Number 2 rated running back, Cam Akers, which it speaks to how good of a running back year it is that Cam Akers could even possibly be rated as the number 2 back. And a lot of people think he's number 1, but I guess more people think Harris is, and I've seen them both, and they're, man, it's hard to really pick a favorite there. Trey Bishop, who is obviously now committed to Georgia. I think he's going to play DB for them, not running back. We'll see. Eno Benjamin, Stephen Carr, Ty Chandler, who is the kid that Ole Miss should have gone in on, had it realized it was going to lose Cam Akers, but it didn't, so he ended up going to Tennessee. Ohio State commit J.K. Dobbins. Georgia commit DeAndre Swift. This is a hell – I'm so excited to see this, and I don't think the defensive tackles in this game are really all that good. So you might see these backs run wild on what day is the game? What day is today? I'm kind of losing track of what day it is because I've just been working for somebody straight.
Right, Monday, this the 1st.
Okay, gotcha. So you look at the DTs in this game, I think the best defensive tackles in the country were at Under Armour. You had Shelvin, the LSU commit. You had Marvin Wilson, who's uncommitted. You had the Fidarian Mathis kid. In this game, you have Aubrey Solomon, and I guess we'll see who else they have step up, but you might really have a situation here where the offensive line is getting the best of the defensive line and blowing them out of the hole. And if that happens, with these backs, they might be putting on a show come Saturday.
Something to watch for. But how much well, let's see. I mean, I find it kind of interesting in the back of my mind here while we're just talking about this and juxtapose it to the conversation juxtapose it to the podcast that we did a couple weeks ago about running backs decide to skipping bowl games in general. All these kids excited about taking part in a game like this 5, 8, 10 days before some of them report to college campus.
I wouldn't play. I've said it before. I think you got to look big picture, but the reasons why they play are twofold. One, most of them have never been on national TV before, and it's a big deal, man. They really want to show out for their guys at home and for their hometown to see them on national TV. That's a big deal for people getting on TV. Number two, for the most part, like 90% of these kids have been the best player that's ever been on their Pee Wee team, their middle school team, their high school team. They were probably the best player on like their all-county all-star game. And a lot of times they're like the best player that's ever come through their high school. they're kind of excited to go play against like super elite guys in an actual game setting. Because remember, like the opening, you don't get to wear pads. So right. You're not really playing true football. It's some 7-on-7 type stuff. They're excited, I think, to test their mettle against other elite prospects. And that's why they do it, along with the getting on TV thing. Mm-hmm. And they're super competitive. Super competitive. They really yeah. have that. That's part, I think, what makes them so great. It's also a downside in terms of guys need you know, thinking, hey, maybe I should take this off because they don't think about it.
Good deal. Not something we had planned on talking about. Just popped into my head when you mentioned that. And, well, everybody can make their own decision. And you're right. People are super competitive. And you're certainly right about the level of talent that these kids have seen otherwise. So interesting to see. And, yeah, look, you've got five of the best backs in the country out there. And that will be something to watch for. That game's always had really good running back talent. I still remember watching Adrian Peterson just absolutely tear that game up and give you some type of idea as to the talent he could be. So certainly look forward to watching it and happy to be able to draw upon your experience of being out there and what you'll be able to glean from the next 3 or 4 days of practice.
All right. Until next time, we will wrap this episode. Guys, very much appreciate you supporting all our sponsors. We've seen lots of really positive feedback. And we've seen lots of positive feedback about the show. I'm looking forward to getting home and seeing my wife and also talking into a better microphone than the one that I bring with me on the road because I don't want to have a real nice one damaged when I do travel. So, yeah, hope you guys are enjoying this. As always, share us, rate us. Happy New Year, everybody.